Welcome to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliott Price. Brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub.
There's a lead pass. In on goal, McDavid scores! 3-1 Canada!
Here's the 1-2 pitch from Martinez. Ball hit out into center field, going back. Marquise Grissom, he's got it! Dennis Martinez has pitched a perfect game!
There's a shot!
The 2-1 pitch. Cordero swings. Base hit. The Expos will win. The Expos will win. Cordero with a base hit to win the ballgame in the bottom of the ninth inning.
The drought is over. Drink it in, Canada. World champions.
And now, here's your host, Elliott Price.
The tragically hip's last American exit, and it touches a nerve. This is where I rant, Monday to Friday, some sports item to laud or some bozo that got under my skin. Ryan Lochte has a whole world of journalists on him, and besides, I skewered him yesterday. I've mentioned a few times I've had something else on my mind this week. I've been listening to CBC Radio on my way in each day. They've been playing tragically hip albums in order, counting down the best to the last concert in their hometown of Kingston. And that'll be tomorrow night. Been somewhat of an emotional personal listening party because as we celebrate Canada's finest band that there ever was, there's an underlying truth. Tomorrow is the last show because Gord Downie is dying. I feel for friends and relatives and for fans like myself. Excuse me for being selfish. But it means as it did when my favorites Warren Zevon and Lou Reed passed away in recent years. There will be no more days when, out of the blue, they'll have something new to say to me. When I first saw Blow It High Dough on Much Music, I fell in love. Then found out they were Canadian. Bought the album. You never know. Sometimes that's all a band has. This one played back to front. Up to here, still my favorite. Many pack all they have in the first album. Years of collecting their best, so second album. Road Apples, first song, Little Bones, killed. And they'd done that for me ever since. When I saw Rolling Stone at last give them some due earlier today, informing the rest of the world of tomorrow's end and putting out a top 10 essential hip list, I looked at it and disagreed. But of course, it's just a matter of opinion. So I put together a list of 10 and it wasn't enough. So today I brought in my list of 12. Listened to them on the drive in. And I disagreed with my own list. Certainly, Weed Kings has to be higher than where I placed them. Tonight on this show, gold medal winners. Two from the Olympics and 12 from Canada's best band ever.
You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliott Price.
Welcome back. Should be a fun show tonight. A whole bunch of everything. But to mention a couple of gold medal winners, we hope we can sneak them in near the end. Great interviews. Done today on 590, The Fan in Toronto with our gold medal high jumper, Derek Drouin, and our gold medal wrestler, Erica Weeb. So four gold medals now for Canada and a bronze medal today. And that was a lot of fun. And we'll hear from our...
Two bronzes today.
Well, okay. I was getting to it.
Oh, sorry.
All right.
Go on.
I was going to talk about Canada's soccer bronze, brought to you by Jorge Sanchez. Well, he didn't bring you the bronze, but he'll talk about it coming up later in the show. We will talk to Canada's chef de mission, Kurt Harnett. Do you know Do you know Kurt Hartnett? Yeah. Won 3 medals at the Olympics, held some world records. And I wonder, as the Olympic Games are coming to a close, because that would be the guy that would have to deal with Lochte if he was American. So I suppose if that's your job, you just hope that nothing happens, right? Nothing happens. That's a good thing. And the medals pour in. What are we at? Because we had 21 and then they took one away.
So it's right? 20 right now. It's 20 officially.
Are you bothered by we didn't, we did, we didn't, we didn't in the speed walking? Is that what it's called?
This could be in the opening faceoff. I'm not giving away spoilers here, but I always want medals, of course. But the question you'll see relates to it. It's the way he handled it is pretty interesting.
All right.
I'll give him that.
Team number 14 in our National Football League countdown. We'll talk to Dan Kalis. The Impact play tomorrow. Giovanni Sardo will be here. And, of course, UFC 202, Gabriel Morenci and Sports Rage always joins us with the latest. And there's a lot to talk about. And I know Grant is up on that, so I'm excited about that. Do you have a favorite Tragically Hip song?
You said it already. You said it yesterday, or I think maybe it was the day before, but Blow It Out High Dough.
Okay.
Is definitely great.
Rolling Stone tweeted out the Essential 10 from Tragically Hip today. They were all videos, so an opportunity for a lot of people who didn't know who the heck they were to see some of what they do. And we'll run our best 12, my best 12, not our best 12, my best 12. We started off with The Last American Exit. And here is song number, since we were at 12, this is song number 11.
Face-off with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson.
All right, here we go. I'm excited.
2 days in a row. Well, actually, 2 days this week. We're going to start with Canadian women's soccer. It was the story of the day so far. Canada's women's soccer beat Brazil today 2-1 to win the bronze medal for the second straight Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
Forget about what it means compared to this year. Which bronze medal win felt better to you? This year's? Or 4 years ago?
They're different. I can't say one feels better than the other. The last one, they were both needed, okay?
Fair.
Because Canadian girls felt they got robbed in the semifinal against the Americans. They played the best team in the world. They played them to a standstill. And there were decisions by the officiating in that game that cost them the game. And they felt that they were jobbed. They felt that they should have gone to the final. And then they got dominated by France. And they got what they deserved. Even though France played better, Canada deserved a medal. This time around, they had to play 3 of the top 5 countries mm-hmm. in the world, beat them all, and then were asked to do it again. And, you know, a penalty, an early goal, it was tough to catch up from there. And so I felt that they really needed to come away with a medal today. And today they were the better team. Last time they won a medal, they were not.
But you don't this always time have they to be were the best, a right?
What's that?
You don't always have to be the best to win. It's about getting right. the bounces. And
but, you know, I enjoyed the fact that they didn't go, well, you know, we came here for gold and that didn't happen. So, you know.
I like all your logic there, and I agree with it. I'm going to say this year's is way better to me
okay.
for the same logic, but it's just last year, it was still too much disappointment with the U.S. controversy, right? It felt like it was a consolation game. It didn't feel like winning a bronze. It felt like The team had a chance at the gold, and it was taken away from them. This year, 10th ranked, like you said, the odds were stacked against them. They made it there. Yes, they could have went further, but I really do feel like this team, like, beat three of the top five teams. Then you beat Brazil there. You won the bronze. I really felt like this one felt better because there was no, you got what you deserved, and it was there.
Both of them were incredibly important, and we'll talk to Jorge about that just after 8:45, because the last time around, it helped get this program
and maybe next
on
year's.
Fire. And look at the next team they had out there today. The girl that scored the first goal of the game, the youngest, not Canada, the youngest player ever in the history of the Olympics to score a goal. And then she set up the second goal. There are 17-year-olds and 19-year-olds and 20-year-olds out there on the field right now, and we're about to lose perhaps the greatest player that has ever taken a pitch for Canada or the world.
Yep.
And we are solid. We are solid. And interesting to see how this team is going to go forward, because they're really good and really young.
And the more you see these succeed, the more young players that will go there. I couldn't agree with you more on that. Look, I told you at the beginning of the week this would come up. I asked you about Michael Phelps, right, and what he was. After winning the 200 meters last night, Usain Bolt declared, "I am the greatest," after it, and said he wants to be compared to Ali and Pele as one of the top athletes ever. We had the conversation about Phelps, like I said. Does Bolt have that argument after what he's accomplished? Not that he is the best, but does he have kind of an argument in this where you can't really say he's not?
Yeah, but so does Phelps.
Well, and I agree with that. I'm not asking
but it's
who's
not, it's
better.
Not, it's not like I... Yeah, okay. Yeah,
absolutely. Phelps did say,
how can he not? I mean, there's no question. Who would say no? What idiot would say no?
A lot of people say it's running... I read an article that said nobody plays defense against Bolt, so it doesn't count.
Nobody
plays defense against Tiger Woods. It's a sport. Like I honestly think what he's done, three Olympics over a decade, eight events, eight goals.
Nobody plays defense.
He's undefeated.
Somebody
right?
said that.
Oh, yeah. There's an article on ESPN about that.
That person needs to never write about sports again. No, I'm serious.
It's very true. I agree.
It's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard.
He brings up Jordan, like how people make defenses
for him. A sport is a sport as it's played under the rules, and you're the best ever at it. What do you want? People, you know, what? So you want us to put goaltenders in front of the holes in golf? Will that make you happier? I mean, because there's no goaltending, you know? There's nothing to stop that ball from going in the hole.
I agree.
Why do you even... 100%. Now I'm angry.
I'll say this. Look, Phelps, when you compare him to the other
people... There's no defense.
I agree, trust me. When you bring up Phelps, other famous swimmers, there's names. But the 100 meters is always that famous race, right? Ben Johnson, obviously, taken away. But look at the athlete he was. Even Donovan Bailey, Michael Johnson, Carl Lewis. All these guys were great in these races, and it's the one that we all remember. Nobody else has won this twice, both of them, the 100 meter and 200 meter. The guy did it three times, 8 years in a row. And think about this feat, okay? We're talking about Ali, Pele. This is career's worth of effort. Usain Bolt is in this argument, and his total time that people have watched, if you're not a track fan, total time for his 100 meters in 3 years, three Olympics, 29.13 seconds. And for the 200 meters, 58.4. So in under a minute and a half, 87.53 seconds, we consider him one of the top athletes of all time. That's impressive.
Well, that's not right. I mean, we also watch him in the, you know, another 10 seconds.
He breaks a record.
In the preliminaries.
Okay,
and
fair.
And then another 10 seconds in the semifinals.
But the public...
It must be up to like a minute and a half now.
That's not even a round for Ali, right? I think it's truly incredible. I love what he did. And look, Montana's considered the best.
No, there's no defense. There's no one punching him in the face when he's running down the track. Is that what we want now?
And I will say this. Montana's great. For what reason do people consider him the best? Because he's 4-0 in the Super Bowl, right?
Okay.
Bolt's 8-0 in his Super Bowl. He's never lost. There's always the pressure, all the eyes on you, right?
Yeah, but it's not,
I know it's different, but I'm just saying.
It's not fair.
He's never lost, and if he wins...
50 teams go to this Super Bowl here.
Even better to still win. Yeah. This one, I can't believe this is a subject that we're talking about, but when you put medals and you put Canada involved, it matters. In the 50-kilometer race walk today, Canadian Evan Dunphy finished fourth. But a Canadian protest led to him getting a bronze, as the Japanese athlete was disqualified after review. Then the Japanese protested the protest, and the disqualification was reversed. But Dunphy decided, instead of going one step further, because I would have loved to see a protest done on the protest of the protest. Yes, you followed that.
Absolutely.
He decided to take the high road and leave it there, saying he wouldn't be able to sleep at night if he took this away from him. What do you make of that? Does that say anything to you? Because this guy might never get anything else again. You want that medal, right? And you had that avenue, and you like look at Tom Brady. He went, he fought it, right?
Yeah. But did you think that there was a legitimate beef that he should have won the bronze?
I thought there was less of a push in the U.S. relay that they got back in. But having said that, I think he could have won. You obviously won the first challenge, right? So then the second one...
I'm asking you, did you think he should have won the bronze?
I don't know the rules, but he's Canadian. Oh. I said yes.
Oh, okay.
Sure. But that's homerism. And what he said, just listen to this quote from him. He had the option to appeal, but to me, I couldn't have honestly and appropriately gone a step further. He was in the same world of hurt as me. He brushed my shoulder. I'm an aggressive walker, and maybe I leaned into him. I couldn't say there was intent.
Yep.
And what he says after is, I had to ask myself, if I got it, would I be proud and be able to sleep at night? I'm proud of my race, and I couldn't honestly take that away from what he did. I think that's, we talk about Olympic spirit, right? The girl helping up. What he just said, he knows how hard he worked for. Look, race walking, don't get me wrong, I'll never watch it in my life. I would never watch it even today.
Did he cross the line hand in hand with the two sisters?
He almost fell over. He couldn't even walk. He looked like somebody after 50 beers.
You see the way they walk? I'm sorry, but they look like they've had 50 beers in the middle of the race.
I will give him this, though. 2 minutes and a half almost better than his time ever.
Wow.
Hey, that's... You go to do something and you... I'm just saying, good for him. Fourth place, nobody will ever remember you. But today we spoke about you. Today we spoke about you.
Remember
that guy? No, nobody will ever remember.
Sure.
Evan Dunphy will be forgotten. He didn't win a medal. It's time.
Dun, dun, dun.
Moving to the NFL.
Oh, thank God.
James Harrison called Roger Goodell a crook today and said the NFL has no evidence against him, but agreed to do the interview about all these PEDs with Al Jazeera to not hurt his team. But what he wanted is for the media to be present at the interview or broadcast it live. Why is this unreasonable for him to want that? Because he's not going to get that.
It's not unreasonable. And baseball today cleared their guys from the Al Jazeera.
So I personally have no... Did you hear his reasoning for it? Why he wants it to be in person? He says that, well, we've seen Roger Goodell can do whatever he wants, right? And get away with it.
That's right.
And he says, I would like for not just me, they can ask me any questions they want and I'll answer. But I want to be able to everybody hear it. You know Roger Goodell never does this, right? You think he'll do it?
No.
Live? Because you know James Harrison could call him out on things then.
Doesn't matter. Not a chance. Not happening.
He's like the guy in Wizard of Oz behind the curtain. Like Roger Goodell. You never hear him talk. At least Gary Bettman faces the music sometimes.
You hear him talk. You know what? The commissioner has really, besides all this other crap that goes on, the commissioner only has one job. And that's make as much money for the owners as he can. And as long as he does that, they don't care. They don't care. It's all about their money.
Last question, quickly. Josh Brown, kicker for the Giants. I'm not sure if you heard. In trouble for domestic violence. Is only suspended one game. The minimum is supposed to be 6 games for first offense.
He's a kicker, for crying out loud.
And he's getting one game.
Get him out of here.
Is this starting to be a joke now with the NFL? Greg Hardy got 10 for having no witnesses, right? The witness didn't cooperate. That's Roger Goodell's reasoning here.
Yeah.
That the witness didn't cooperate, neither did the police. Greg Hardy, same thing, but they said he paid her off, or they thought so, and he got 10 games. Josh Brown, because you're a kicker, gets one game.
Are you saying he got a kicker because it was one game?
No. But you said
he got one game because he was a kicker?
I just think nobody cares, so they let it go, but I think the NFL is just, you got to be consistent. If you're going to give punishments, be consistent.
Well, you're my consigliere, so I'm going with whatever you say, I'm going with it.
I'm going to hold you to that.
On this subject.
Ah.
The opening face-off with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson. You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson.
By the way, Alouette's doing real well in a must-win game on the road tonight. Grant will have the details coming up on our Sportsnet Sports Update. Canada wins a bronze medal, beating Brazil 2-1. Got a little hairy at the end there, but Canada hangs on and wins the soccer bronze today in Rio against the home team. Jorge Sanchez will join us later in the hour and tell us Canada deserved it.
I think this bronze medal is a game that they really, really earned. Everybody talks about when they played France 4 years ago, how they got completely dominated by the French. and managed to steal a bronze medal at the end of the game. They really came out to play, got two goals, got up, and they were able to control the tempo of the game. Even if they gave away possession, front foot, they made Brazil play to them.
How about hearing from a couple of gold medal winners? Our first opportunity, thanks to the Fan 590 in Toronto. First, Erica Weeb. She won 75-kilogram wrestling.
I felt like I had so much pressure on me, like, leading into the games. And even, you know, that was why I was struggling in 2015, because I knew I had what it took, and I was putting so much pressure on myself to wrestle my best and to win every match and to wrestle a certain way. And you know what, this yesterday morning when I woke up for my day of competition, I knew I had done every single thing I could do to lead into that day, to prepare myself. And I really felt so free just to go out there and just to execute my game plan and just to wrestle.
Erica Weeb, gold medal for Canada in wrestling. How about Derek Drouin, gold medal in the high jump, and he was ready.
Everything is always geared toward whatever the major championship. Obviously, this year was the Olympic Games. So in April and May, I'm definitely not jumping as high as I would hope or as high as I hope to in August. But I've been with my coach for so long and trust fully that he's going to have me ready in August, that it's pretty easy to sit back and just enjoy it and just trust the process and really believe that he'll have me peaking at the right time.
Gold medal winner Derek Drouin. Meanwhile, the Impact are at home. Back-to-back games. Quick turnaround. They'll play tomorrow. Try to get that struggling D all worked out. Mauro Biello?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of lack of cohesion right now with my back line. I think, you know, it's, you know, Laurent has been struggling working with an injury, and that doesn't help. The fact that he was gone for a month and a half, you know, hurts a little bit the rhythm and the cohesion in the duo, and not just individually, but also in the duo, because it is a partnership when you play with two center backs, and how you move is important, and you need to move together to be effective. And for us, we are continuing to work on it. We're continuing to adjust and adapt in little things that could help us improve and help us have that rhythm that we need going forward.
Also adapting at the other end of the pitch, two strikers, Mancosu and Drogba, experimenting last game and thinking about going forward with it again.
You know, things are not going to happen right away. We worked on certain things, but it's an option for me going forward if we need to unbalance teams, depending tactically what we see from the other team and how we see we could benefit.
USPM. And the Calgary Flames starting to get their pins all in order. Sean Monahan signs a long-term deal, 7 years. Brad Treliving getting his guys in a row.
For us, I mean, when you're making the type of commitment, obviously you want to, in most cases, get that for as long as you can. Again, it focuses a lot about his age. You know, this is the ripe old age of 21, soon to be 22. We look at this as securing Sean for really the prime years of his career. And so as much as we joke all the time, what takes so long in negotiations, just two things, is usually term and money, and you got to balance them out. So to get Sean at this number for this type of term worked for us. I think it fits in when you look at the age of the core group of our players. It fits in terms of you know, having him locked up as a key piece and a key pillar of this team for the next, the next 7 years, which we think are going to be very productive years for Sean.
I mean, I don't want to play anywhere else. I mean, I would sign as long as I could, and I think we found 7 years fit, and it was fair for both of us. So it's, I think it's a good deal, and that's how it worked out.
grass of the prairie, we kings of all treasures buried. Now you hear all the rusty breezes pushing around the weather vane, Jesus.
Tragically Hip, one more day. Tomorrow night, concert in their hometown of Kingston, counting down my favorites. So far, three gone and nine more to come. We'll talk to the chef de mission for Canada and find out what does a chef de mission do at the Olympics. We'll go to Rio coming up next when we talk to Kurt Hartnett. First, we'll get an update from Grant in just a moment.
Elia. You're a small petty man.
Elia.
I am king of the county.
Idiot.
I'm inadequate. I'm disturbed. I'm emotional. I'm hungry.
I'm gonna make him an offer again with you.
Our balls are in your court.
Yes.
You're tuned in to Sportsnet Tonight with your host Elliot Price. Exclusively on 1280 AM Montreal.
I have no idea what the hell happened or what to do about it.
Do you ever just get down on your knees and thank God that you know me and have access to my dementia?
Weekend for the Tragically Hip, so we're counting them down. My favorite 12. Last American Exit will go to Weed Kings and Are You Ready? And if you don't like the Tragically Hip, are you really Canadian? That is the question. Go to Rio and talk to the chef de mission for Canada. He's Kurt Hartnett. How are you, Kurt?
I'm living the dream.
I guess. What's your favorite Tragically Hip song?
Well, I kind of flip between Bob Cajun and 50 Mission Cap myself. Hey.
Very nice. All right, yeah, I'm a blow it high guy.
Sometimes, but you know what? Big fan of those guys. Sad that you know that it's coming to the end like it is. But it sounds like things have been really churning. They've been churning out some great shows back home. So that's very exciting.
Well, we thank you so much for finding some time and coming on with us here in Montreal. Obviously, a very busy man to rally the troops, and the troops have been rallied, my friend. We were targeting 19 medals. We thought that was where we were going to be. We're already at 20. So can you relax with a couple of days left?
Yeah, my work here is done, man. It's time for me to go home. The Canadian Olympic Committee, the Canadian Olympic team, you know, and with its partners on the podium, Governor Canada, work together. And, you know, there's never really a target as much as there's a sense that this is the kind of the medal count that we can see. As we all know in sport, it's never, you know, the outcome is never a given, or very rarely is it a given, and that's why we love it so much. And so we always want to shy away from saying it's a guaranteed 19 medals, because that puts undue pressure on the system, and why do we need to do that? But certainly when you want to figure out where you're going, you got to set some targets and some goals. And really, ultimately, our goal was top 12 placing here at these games, and we do that in a total medal count concept. And so, you know, to get to that top 12 placing, it looked like we needed to be, you know, 19, 20 medals, and that may prove to be the case.
Kurt Hartnett is a Canadian icon. He's in the Canadian Sports Hall of Fame. He's in the Canadian Olympic Hall of Fame, three medals. We require, apparently, in our country for our chef de mission to have been an Olympian. They call you on the phone and go, hey, Kurt, what are you doing in August?
That's pretty much what it was. And the Canadian Olympic Committee does a very unique thing with its chef de mission, and it uses that position as a role model, mentor, you know, leader, and quite frankly, glorified cheerleader in supporting the team on the road, the journey to the Olympic Games, and then at the Olympic Games. And for myself, I was the chef de mission. I was actually the assistant chef de mission for the 2011 Pan American Games team that was down in Guadalajara, Mexico. I became the chef de mission for the Pan Am Games team in Toronto last summer, and became the chef de mission for this Rio team when Jean-Luc Brossard decided he wanted to step aside. So Jean-Luc passed me the baton, and I've just been blessed with the opportunity to run it across the finish line.
Were you nervous at the beginning, and did Penny get, like, lessen the nerves? You know, okay, there's a couple of medals coming in now. It's all going to be okay.
Well, you know what? My experience back in Toronto with this team was, a turning point for, I think, the summer sports programs here in Canada, or, you know, there in Canada, here in Rio, for their Canadian teams. Because, you know what, we walked into the opening ceremonies in Toronto, 50,000 people rained pride down on our Canadian athletes, the summer athletes, and they recognized at that moment that Canada had their back. And for me, that was, a real important moment. And the journey from that point on the road to Rio to today was really, I think a watershed moment where our athletes just kind of went out there with a little more confidence, a little more pride, and a little more understanding that Canada's got their back. And that translated into results on the field of play. Coming in here, our women's soccer team, who just won a bronze medal today, but our women's soccer team just the Wednesday before the opening ceremonies beat Australia in an underdog. You know, they were the underdog going into the game, and they beat Australia 2-0. And I think that set the tone for the entire delegation, the 314 athletes that were here to represent Canada.
Kurt, Grant Robinson here. We just talked about, you know, the goals for the entire Olympics. Obviously, any medal that's been won is great, but is there any event or moment you've watched thus far that stood out more than others in these Olympics?
You know, that's a great question, because there continue to be every day amazing performance by athletes that don't result in a medal. And you know what? We just saw one today in the 50-kilometer race walk with Evan Dunphy, who placed fourth. And then all of a sudden, they decided to disqualify the Japanese athlete who had won the bronze medal. And Evan was in the bronze medal position. And then the Japanese protested. And then all of a sudden, you know, Evan's back in the fourth place position. So, you know, the way he handled himself, and he's put a statement up on athletics.ca, the website for the Canadian Track and Field Association, or Athletics Canada, sorry. You know what? I suggest everybody go read that statement, because if you want to hear from a true and get a perspective on what it means to be an Olympian and what it means to compete and not necessarily win a medal, his statement says it all. And I couldn't be more proud to have a person like Evan Dunphy as a member of this team, and he represents us. I think he represents all athletes very, very well.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing, talking to Kurt Hartnett, who is the chef de mission for Canada in Rio, where I think that you want to make it to the end of the games without having a Ryan Lochte moment.
Well, you know what? We also can't forget that athletes are humans, yeah. And like all humans, things sometimes happen, and quite frankly, we are lucky that we've got a great, solid group of individuals here, great teammates who respect the host nation that they're in. We've had nothing but great things to say about the people here in Rio, quite frankly, the country of Brazil. It's transferring into how our athletes are acting and how they're out there, enjoying their environment here and appreciating what this city. And quite frankly, this country has to offer, and it's been a spectacular Games.
Yeah, you knew you were going to do this. Can you believe it's Friday night, and there's less than 2 days until the end, and then it's over?
You know what? The funny thing is I've done my journey through this has been day to day. If you asked me what I was doing tomorrow, I kind of just did some planning on that, so I kind of have an idea what I'm doing tomorrow, but most of the time I don't. I'm in the moment. I'm in here and now. And it wasn't chasing medal moments. It was chasing athletes and getting out there, cheering them on, letting them know that they saw the Canadian flag in the stands while they were out competing on the field of play, to know that Canada had their back. And for me and my two cohorts, Isabelle Charest and Carol Wynn, the three of us making up the sort of the chef's office, if you want, we went out there and we tried to cheer on every athlete that we possibly could. We think we did a pretty good job of that. But haven't really even had a chance to reflect back and say, oh my gosh, there's only 2 days left. Because quite frankly, the next 2 days are very exciting. So, tomorrow I'm excited about what opportunities are going to be presented. Brooks and, we got Brooke and Alina Sharp in golf. We've got our mountain bikers, Catherine Pendrell and Emily Batty going to battle up there on mountain bike. We've got, Mark DeJong and canoe kayak, in the sprint competition, the kayak sprint, so it just kind of, the list goes on and on as to what's happening. And then that's for me, just kind of how I've managed all of this. I'm sure come Monday morning, I'll be just kind of going, okay, what am I supposed to do now? Like, who's competing now? And just all of a sudden realize that Elvis has left the building.
I tell you what, Elvis will want to be in the building 4 years from now, because you're looking at Canada's team at this Olympics. And today it was a 17-year-old girl who scored the big goal for Canada. And yesterday it was a 21-year-old young man who finished second behind Usain Bolt. And it's a 19-year-old golfer that's one of the best golfers in the world. And on it goes. It's a 16-year-old swimmer. I mean, 4 years from now, we're going to be amazing.
Yeah, I think that there's... There's some great performances here from our young members of this team. Certainly my hope and desire is that Canada doesn't let go of this moment and forget about these athletes until, 2020, that we get to see and hear from them a little more often and have the Canadians out there supporting them in the various competitions that they'll have, World Cups and World Championships, the Commonwealth Games, the Pan Am Games, all the way on the road to Tokyo. So, for me, these are great individuals, great role models, wonderful representatives of our great nation, and certainly excited how much Canada's come together with this team here, and look forward to that continuing on their journey to Tokyo.
Kurt Hartnett, Canada's chef de mission in Rio. Can't tell you what a pleasure it was talking to you, and I can see why you got the job. You'd be my guy.
Well, it's been an incredible journey up until now. Looking forward to the next 2 days. I'm looking forward to hearing the people of Montreal's voice down here all the way in Rio cheering on our athletes. It's been an overwhelming amount of support for this team here on the ground.
All right, Kurt. Merci beaucoup.
Merci beaucoup.
After I saw Blow It High Do, I went out and bought the album, as I said, and then the album plays back to front, and it's got this song on it. I always thought this was, they've always sounded just like the Tragically Hip, but this had a kind of Stones feel to it, Trickle Down, but it's also Canadiana, Wow. I would imagine the numbers will be through the roof tomorrow watching the very last concert of Tragically Hip. It will be a Canadian moment. Anyways, counting it down for you, my favorite 12. Last American Exit will go to Weed Kings, Are You Ready? And Trickle Down. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Still 7 to go. And speaking of Canada, we continue along in our Olympic ways. A bronze medal for Canada today. We've talked to the coach of the Concordia women each and every one of Canada's games. And I believe, I believe that Jorge Sanchez has helped them bring a bronze medal home. He's been a good luck charm. And we'll talk to him about Canada's medal today in Brazil against the home team coming up next.
You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson.
So it's a bronze medal for Canada, as I guess it should be, after not winning in the semifinal. There are two ways this could have gone. Jorge Sanchez has been with us right from the beginning. He's the women's soccer coach at Concordia. How you doing, Jorge?
Pretty good. I'm very happy to have seen the result today.
Now, I was mentioning it could have gone both ways. Obviously, there's two ways. You win a bronze, you don't win a bronze. But after playing three of the toughest countries in the world and beating them, and then, as they say, very difficult to beat anybody twice, and they lose, they could have let down and let it go. Or they could say, you know what, we came this far, and we didn't come this far for nothing. And that's certainly the way they came out against Brazil.
Definitely. I think this bronze medal is a game that they really, really earned. Everybody talks about when they played France 4 years ago, how they got completely dominated by the French and managed to steal a bronze medal at the end of the game. They really came out to play, got two goals, got up, and they were able to control the tempo of the game. Even if they gave away possession, front foot, they made Brazil play to them.
And we got an opportunity to, how nice, bookends, right, as far as the Canadian goals are concerned. The future and the present and past. I mean, Deanne Rose, the youngest player, not just Canada, the youngest player ever to score a goal at the Olympics. And, of course, the great Canadian captain finishing off the scoring.
And it was great. I mean, the first goal was two of the players that we hope are the next generation that are going to keep this success going. You had Ashley Lawrence, who I think was probably Canada's best all-around player the entire tournament, putting a great pass across the net to Deanne Rose. And like you mentioned, bookended by Christine St. Clair, ending up being the winning goal. So it's pretty great that Christine St. Clair gets to be seen as having scored the winning goal in the bronze medal game. But let's not forget who got her the ball, Jessie Fleming, an 18-year-old who put an incredible move to get the ball across.
Well, not only does Sinclair score the goal, and you talk about all the young players involved in this game helping Canada to the bronze, but that's a testament to Sinclair as well. I mean, rising to be one of the greatest, if not the greatest scorer in the history of women's soccer, has brought along an entire generation of soccer girls that will help Canada maybe win gold 4 years from now.
For sure. A few years ago, I saw a dual interview with Abby Wambach and Christine St. Clair, arguably the two greatest scorers in the history of women's soccer. And they were comparing notes, and they asked Abby Wambach who she thought was the better of the two players. And she said, Christine St. Clair, without a doubt, because I've always had great teammates around me. Christine St. Clair has carried her team for the last decade. And it just shows. Christine St. Clair was the player for the longest time, and she's created this desire to be representing Canada. And we see the youth. I mean, we see these great young players who held their own.
You get the feeling if this was a league and a 30-game schedule that Canada might have come up on top or certainly closer to the top than just finishing third.
They played six games, ended up 5-1, beat Germany, beat Brazil, beat France, beat Australia. They beat Zimbabwe, which you would have expected. To beat Germany a second time within the space of a week was a tall order. So anytime you go 5-1 in a sequence of six games, it's a great result. And what I like is the way John Herdman managed the team. You know, everybody says you stick with a winning lineup. He constantly made changes and tinkered with the lineup game to game, and he always seemed to put the right players. Starting Deanna Rose, who hadn't really played a lot except at the end of games, he started her today, and she rewards his decision by scoring the opening goal.
Talking with Jorge Sanchez, he's the women's soccer coach at Concordia, and of course they're getting ready to play soccer. How will this impact your team, watching Canada's great players?
I think, you know, anytime you get to see peers playing, that's what it's about. You know, my players and all the other female soccer players out there who have an interest in the high level of sport, they got to see our best athletes performing at the very highest level and being successful. You can use them as an example now.
If people in the Montreal area come out to see Concordia and the teams that Concordia plays this year, who might they see that they might see in 4 years playing for Canada?
There's quite a few players. You know, just as a side note, Josée Bélanger is a product of our league. She played for Sherbrooke for 5 seasons. And she's an example of a player who didn't go to the U.S. to go to school and stayed in the Canadian university system and ended up still making the national program. University of Laval has a great core of young players. A few of them have played with the youth national team. UCAM has a couple of national youth players. Those are the two teams that have what I would say the players that are closest to sort of stepping up to the national program.
Tell us about your team. When you get underway, people can come watch you play. What kind of team you have this year?
We started this week. We just started training camp. We're completing our first week. We have a team where 50% of the girls are all new, but they're older players coming out of CJEP. So we have a very well balance between rookies and vets. We're heading to Ontario next week for preseason, a couple of preseason games in North Bay, Ontario. And we kick off our season on September 2nd against McGill. So it'll be a great, great opportunity.
All right, so bringing it back to the Canadian Olympic team that wins a bronze medal. If you would have told them before the Olympics they would have won bronze, would that have been enough for them, or would they have been disappointed?
I think an elite-level athlete always looks to the highest possible level. You saw with Andre DeGrasse, you know, in his mind, he was going to be Usain Bolt. I think the Canadians had the same mindset in women's soccer. Anything less than a gold medal for them was a disappointment leading into the tournament. I think when the dust settles and they look back at what they accomplished and what they've done for the country in terms of women's soccer, I think they can come home with their heads held high.
I think a lot of people are surprised by that, and I tell them all the time, no matter how bad a team is and how good a team they're playing, the team that is the lesser still sits in that dressing room before the game thinking, we're going to win today.
You have to remember, this was a 12-team tournament, and Canada's ranked 10th in the world. It's only because of the equal representation by area that there happen to be two teams that are ranked lower. But pretty much, you know, every other team was ranked higher than Canada. So they were fighting an uphill battle the whole way, and they just found a way to get results. They had one loss. Was it a good effort on their part? They had moments they played very well, others not so much. But other than that, they found a way to win. They found a way to get results. I think if you win at a big tournament, a bronze medal, it's fantastic.
Jorge Sanchez, I'm glad we found you, or you found us. You did a great job with us covering the women at the Olympics. We thank you so much for your time. Best of luck with Concordia this season. We'll get back to you. We'll talk soccer later on in the season.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me on, Elliot.
Counting them down. Thank you, Jorge Sanchez, coach of Concordia's women when it comes to soccer. And Canada with a bronze medal victory today. And it'll be interesting to see how, you know, another good year, another medal, how this affects the game in this country.
for women over the next 4 years. Man, we need something to help the men. All right, we'll get another update, and then it's Team 14 at our National Football League countdown. We're getting there. Dan Kalis coming up on CFMB 1280 AM in Montreal. It's Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price. It is time for Team number 14 in our National Football League countdown. Each and every day leading up to Game 1 of the National Football League season on September 8th. We'll bring you another team as we get closer to naming our Super Bowl champion. Well, his Super Bowl champion, DK Daniel Kalis, every night. And Team 14, I believe, will come as a major disappointment in my household. DK, who's number team? Who's number 14?
We got the Jacksonville Jaguars.
All right. You know what? Jacksonville Jaguars, and I'm looking right now at their record over the last 5 years. 5 years since the last time they were 500. In fact, they haven't been over 500 since 2007. But in 2010, they were 8-8. And since then, they are 19-61, and they've been outscored by 702 points. Now, last year, they were 5-11. This would put them at the 9 or 10 win mark at 14th. So how do they make the jump from 5 to 9 or 10?
Couple of things happened for them. One is, as we saw last year, even though they only had 5 wins, their offense really picked it up. The two Allens, Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns, were beasts last year, both scoring double-digit TDs. And Blake Bortles, their first-round quarterback that they took, he took a big step last year. The reason that they didn't get to take an even bigger step last year was the defense, and one of that was their first-round pick, Fowler. He got injured in preseason training camp and was missed for the whole season. The reason I think they're going to take that huge jump, they've got him coming back this year, so that's like, you know, a new addition. They drafted two defensive guys in the first two rounds, Jalen Ramsey and Miles Jack. Miles Jack, who had had an injury last year in college, he seems to be a guy that has first-round talent. People just worry about his injury, and they signed a whole bunch of guys in free agency. So I think the defense is about to catch up to that offense, and if it does, you know, the sky's the limit for this team.
Well, let's start with that offense. I'll be honest, Blake Bortles had a pretty rough start to his career, 11 touchdowns, 17 interceptions. I think he almost had as many pick sixes as he did touchdowns of his own in that first year. I wasn't a huge fan of him coming out of college, but last year, 35 touchdowns, forget the interceptions because that's any young quarterback. He was finally able to be a threat when he was on the field. Do you see him ever being elite? Forget this year, but is this guy, obviously a franchise quarterback means 32, but can you see him being top 10 ever?
I think he could. I'll be honest, I'm with you. I wasn't overly impressed his rookie year. I wasn't even, you know, I don't want to say I wasn't that high on him when he came in, but I didn't know enough about him per se. I hadn't seen him enough coming out of, you know, Central Florida, but he really took steps. And I think also it goes back to our discussion last night about who, you know, is it the receiver or the quarterback? I think that they've got a good mix of guys in terms of the two Allens. You know, Robinson was a beast last year, mm-hmm. and Hearn sort of is the guy who's sort of come out of nowhere a little bit. You add in Julius Thomas, the tight end that they added from Denver. They've got T.J. Yeldon, running back they drafted last year, that came on at the end. He had some good games. Plus, they added Chris Ivory. I think that Bortles has the weapons where he doesn't have to put it all on himself. But when the game's on the line and he needs to step up, I think he can do it. And I think he's got the tools to do it. And I think this team is going in the right direction. You know, even if they don't make the playoffs this year, but they take a jump to 8 wins or even 9 wins, I think this team is a team that is going to be dangerous for a number of years to come.
Talking with Dan Kalis as we count down our National Football League teams on our way to number one. We've taken care of 18 of them. We're at number 14 now with the Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm looking at Blake Bortles' record, and he did lead the National Football League in the same category 2 years in a row. Any idea what that is?
I would think it's interception.
He got sacked 106 times in the last 2 years. That cannot continue. You cannot have this guy on his back that many times. 55 and 51 in the last 2 years. What have they done to step up protection of Blake Bortles?
What they've done is, the problem is they drafted Luke Joeckel a couple years, top three pick, and he's been a big bust. So what they did is they went out and signed Calvin Beecham, who had played left tackle for Pittsburgh. He's finally now getting back to being able to practice, and their hope is that if they can get him in game shape, he moves to left tackle, and they move Joeckel into hopefully left guard, and that can help solidify the left end of the position, and they're hoping that that's going to make them better. I think that it's a little bit of a questionable, like you said, we're putting a lot in Blake Bortles, and they're bringing in a left tackle who's had some injury issues, but they seem to think that he'll get his game in shape for the you know, regular season. And I think if they can and he can play well, that's going to be a big difference. Because like you said, that's not the category you want to be leading if you're a quarterback.
I was going to ask you about the Allens, but you kind of mentioned it off the top. I really do think they're one of the best 1-2 combinations in the NFL, if not the best right now. But the question I have now, Julius Thomas, was he just a product of Peyton Manning with those 12 touchdown seasons, you know, another Dallas Clark? Or can you see this guy being a great tight end?
I will take a bit of a compliment one, and I say I think he's a bit in the middle. I think anyone who gets to play with Peyton Manning is obviously a bonus, as you say, a guy like Dallas Clark. We've seen a number of other receivers that he's had good seasons with that never turned out to do very much after you know, or before. But I think that Thomas is a little bit more talented than that. I think last year he battled some injuries, you know, from training camp and preseason, and wasn't able to start the season fresh. And that often, you know, no matter how good you are, it often, you know, puts you behind the eight ball. So I think this year he's fresh, he's healthy, he's going into the season. You know, they can't just clamp down on him because they've got the Allens. They added Chris Ivory to help with the running game. So I think the fact that you've got all these weapons allows everyone to get one-on-one matchups. And I think that Thomas is going to go back to being a good red zone guy to have. Look, I think that they're going to be doing better in games. And so I think a lot of the offensive stats in terms of the passing touchdowns, I think if I remember, Bortles had 23 of his 35 touchdowns were in the second half or overtime because they were always behind and always having to come back. So I think that's not going to be the case as much as here because they're going to be a better defense and they're going to be in more games. But that doesn't mean that they can't put up those numbers or put up the you know, get the big first down when they need to or score that big touchdown when they need to.
All right. It's a fourth year for Gus Bradley. I mean, they can't afford to get – he can't afford to have his team get off to a poor start considering it's time to move on up. 5-11, 3-13, 4-12, he definitely has to be on the bubble here.
Oh, I would be surprised if they got off to a really bad start. I wouldn't be surprised, sorry, if they, you know, made the move. But I think they do like him and want to give him this chance. So they need to see something forward, and they need to see, you know, either playoffs or you know, in the playoff hunt until the end of the season so the ownership and management can say, okay, we know we're going in the right direction. They took a big leap this year. But if they don't, they have such a young team and so much talent that they're not going to sit around with a coach, you know, losing record after losing record. So I think he is on the hot seat. I think he's one of the guys on the hottest seat, and if they don't make it to, I would say 8-8, 9-7, I think he's gone.
You mentioned some of the additions off the top. Offensively, they made a few, but defensively, Malik Jackson, Telvin Smith at linebacker last year was one of the top breakout players. Now, Fowler, Ramsey, Jack are essentially one healthy, three top five picks added in 1 year. How good can this defense be in the future?
I think it could be great. You added in also safety Tayshaun Gibson. You added in some help, former Giant first-rounder Prince McMorris. It's just about depth. They have Puzzolzi at linebacker who's battled injuries, but last year had a good year. It will take them a little bit of time like anything else. You know, there are a bunch of new guys all getting together, so it might take them a little bit of time to gel. But if these guys can gel and they can stay healthy, I mean, you got some guys. Some people thought Jalen Ramsey could have been, you know, the one or two pick with the talent that he has. Same with Fowler. Miles Jack was a top 10 talent just with the injury stuff. So once these guys gel, if they can get going, I think the sky's limit for the defense as much as the offense. And they've got two, you know, big power running backs that if they can get the lead, these guys can keep the ball going and they'll keep it, you know, they keep the offense on the field and run up the clock. So this defense, if it catches up to the offense, like I said, people better watch out.
Well, you said I'm really optimistic about them as well. I like all the moves they made, but some people have the Jags even higher than you put them. I'll admit, look, this is one of the best off seasons I've ever seen potentially for a team. But are you a little afraid that this could be like the Eagles' self-proclaimed dream team they put together a few years ago? When you add in new pieces like that, there's not really any, like you said, there's no time to gel. So do you think that'll be a problem this year?
I think it's possible, and that's sort of why I put him here, because I feel like the teams we're at now that we're all talking about, if you told me that any of these teams go from where we're talking, you know, say 8 wins or 9 wins, and they go up to 10, 11 wins, they win their division, they win around in the playoffs, I don't think any of us are going to be surprised about any of the teams we're talking about. That's all the teams we're going to talk about from here on and have the talent, you know, they have added, made additions, or they've done whatever to make themselves better. It's a matter of which teams can do it, can get together the quickest. And I like your example of talking about the Eagles' dream team, because often the Eagles over the last bunch of years have always been a team that wins the Super Bowl in the offseason, they like to say it. And obviously that does nothing for you. So Jacksonville, they're hoping not to be that. I think they're going to have their set site probably. They're not, you know, obviously anyone wants to win the Super Bowl, but I think their sets are, you know, making serious improvements from last season, trying to get to a winning record, trying to fight for that playoff spot, and hoping that by the time the, you know, week one, week two, week three in the season, this defense, these guys know what they're supposed to do. They know their assignments. They know where each guy's going to be, and they can all grow together, and they can be, you know, a cohesive unit that these guys can grow from this year to being a contender, you know, a playoff contender, to next year, like a championship contender.
Daniel Kalis, thanks. We'll talk to you Monday.
Thanks, everyone. Have a good weekend.
All right. DK, he gives us the Jaguars. So the Browns, the Niners, the Titans, the Ravens, the Lions, the Bucks, the Chargers, the Rams, the Falcons, the Bears, the Dolphins, Washington, Eagles, Saints, Cowboys, Bills, Jets, Colts, and the Jaguars. Not only in the NFL, but our top 12 favorite songs of the Tragically Hip as they get ready for their last concert tomorrow. Last American Exit will go to We Kings. Are You Ready? Trickle Down, Sherpa, and now Poets. We've got five left to go there and 13 left in our National Football League countdown. The Impact, back at it again. We talked about this, a little four-game schedule there, looking for three wins in four games, 9 points. Well, they got one. They lost the one on the road. Now it's back-to-back at home. And we'll talk to our soccer guy, breaking it down. Next up for The Impact, Giovanni Sardo is next.
Christ.
Yeah, baby.
I am not to be troubled with.
Could I be a little more Weasley?
Yes!
We're on a mission from God.
You are.
Never ends!
Missed it by that one.
Yeah. Let's face it, this is not the worst thing you've caught me doing.
Tragically Hip countdown at number five with My Music at Work. Time to talk Impact as they get ready for a busy week. They play today and then they tomorrow, and then they play middle of next week, and that finishes that four-game thing we were talking about where the hope was they would win three. They won one. They lost on the road. Now they have these two home games. Giovanni Sardo, how you doing?
Optimistic.
Optimistic. Oh, and you were. I mean, you mentioned that you thought they were going to take three. Well, they got to win the second one, and that's tomorrow. So what's to be optimistic about going into that game? How are they going to fix the problem on defense, the one that Coach Mauro Biello was talking about off the top of the show?
Well, first of all, Chicago is the absolute worst team in the MLS this season. They haven't won on the road. So in terms of the easiest game of the year on paper, this should be it. Even the media in Chicago are calling for a loss and calling the game hopeless for them. So, definitely a game that should be easy pickings. Whether or not Drogba plays,
Mancosu in the starting 11 should be able to light it up for the Impact. Defensively, obviously, you have Oyongo who's out with the red card. You have the healthy bodies that you need. You know, I think you'll see a guy like Donny Toya come back into the lineup. You know, but with the games coming in this week, there will be some squad rotation and some guys will get some rest. But defensively at home against a team that's offensively inept like the Fire, I'm not overly worried.
All right, let's hear from Coach. We talked earlier about the two-striker offense, and he liked what he saw.
You know, things are not going to happen right away. We worked on certain things, but it's an option for me going forward if we need to unbalance teams depending tactically what we see from the other team and how we see we could benefit.
So there you go. Hoping that Mancosu and Drogba will coexist. And he liked, that Drogba was drawing some attention. Mancosu was open. And this will allow for more offense.
Yeah, it allows for more creativity. Now, the big question is, what is he going to do in his midfield? Because those two guys up top, very dangerous. They do draw defenders towards them, which opens up space for the other, opens up space for Piatti. But I think that the change in the formation that the Impact will need is to remove somebody like Callum Malice out of the starting 11 and add a Dominic Oduro in there or a Michael Salazar just to give more offensive options, allow more creativity. And it's new, this two-forward system. So they're still getting to know each other. We've seen some great things. And against a team that's defensively weak, you know, it can only boost their confidence together.
All right, so the Fire are in tomorrow, and then 4 days later, it's DC United coming to town. How do you handle a lineup? And then they play again the following Saturday, so it's three games in 8 days. Do you see some guys in and out to make sure that everybody's fresh? I mean, you said it's the worst team tomorrow, so everybody goes, and they're okay for DC United?
Well, I think that against DC United, you have to put out your strongest starting 11, but now it's a matter of game management. If you're able to go up a goal or two in the 60th minute, this is where you start looking at, you know, subbing out a Laransima, a Drogba, a Piatti to keep them fresh for the midweek and the next game. And then you have to see at the end of the game, do you have guys that are injured? Did anybody pick up a red card? But overall, you know, you do have to see the older guys like Bernardello, like Donadel getting a rest. So it'll be a good opportunity for guys like Kyle Becker to step back onto the field and maybe get out of, you know, the coach's doghouse and, you know, start earning some minutes.
With Giovanni Sardo talking Impact as usual, I mean, we're getting to the point where they have to get in a rhythm. They have to get into a winning rhythm going down the stretch here and getting ready for the playoffs.
Well, they have to start racking up the points. You know, the other teams are winning. They're not going to just, you know, sit there and wait for the Impact to see if they're going to move up. They got to do their thing. So this is a perfect opportunity. Like we've said, three wins out of four games. You know, the Fire, absolutely beatable team. DCU, not the strongest of teams as well. And this is great for the confidence moving forward. But if they lose one of these two games, it could spell disaster for the team.
All right, Giovanni, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure, my friend. Take care.
Countdown with our Tragically Hip as they get ready for their final concert tomorrow at home in Kingston. Membership, that leaves us with three on our way to the last song of the night, which will take us on home. But we're excited now. We're excited because, one, the men's 4x100 is coming up, so we're excited about that. And we have great guests coming up. Sports Rage himself. It's Gabriel Morenci as we get ready for UFC 202. Gabe coming up after Grant's update, coming up after this. It's almost time, ladies and gentlemen, to hear from Mr. Sports Rage himself. Gabriel Morenci is next on Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price on CFMB 1280 AM in Montreal.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yes!
Small meat platter.
Oui, papa.
Side order of fries. Fries every weeknight.
You're tuned into Sportsnet Tonight with your host, Elliot Price, right here on 1280 AM, Montreal.
What do you mean I'm not an expert?
Ding, 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 ding.
Your ass happy hour is here. It's time to talk to Gabriel Morenci. Gabe, what's going on?
I'm doing all right, Elliot. I could be doing better as I'm actually sweating out a New York Jet Washington Redskin preseason game.
See, I don't do that anymore, so I have to worry about that.
Yeah, I wish I didn't do it tonight. You know what the craziest, stupidest part of this is? I did this because of Geno Smith.
You know what, Geno Smith in
the preseason, he's a good quarterback against, you know, second and third stringers, but no, he isn't.
No, I'm sorry. The stupidest thing about this is that you bet a preseason game. This is the stupidest thing.
No, that's not true. I cashed a ticket last night with the Philadelphia Eagles.
Well,
it was stupid of me to bet on it. I had the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah.
How about this Dak Prescott kid? Unbelievable. 6 of 6 for 99 yards.
I got a Cowboy fan across from me. He was just talking about him off the air. Was he? He was, 12 for 14 and then 7 for 7?
In this game,
You're killing me here.
He's looking good.
All right. But we're here to talk about UFC 202, and all hell broke loose. It was written that way. Or partly written that way? What were we watching the other day?
No, a lot of times it's sort of a gimmick in a situation like this. Over the years, there's been very few fighters that legitimately hate each other and, you know, really do hate each other. But Conor McGregor has the ability to make whoever he's fighting hate him. And normally it takes that fighter out of their game and out of their element and makes them fight on emotion. As it sounds crazy, but you can't fight on emotion. You really can't. You have to be cerebral. This, you know, cerebral assassin, so to speak. And Conor's always done a good job of taking people out of their elements, but Diaz lives in this element. So, no, I don't think it was staged. Conor calling out WWE superstars and talking about how he'd kick the crap out of anyone in the WWE, that's staged. That's him trying to get on ESPN and market this fight. But the actual them throwing bottles at each other and stuff, anybody that's followed MMA for a long time knows that, you know, Diaz has been in various brawls, the Diaz boys, the camp, Jake Shields. That's what they do. You know, this is their element. And, you know, it's something that I thought that Conor McGregor learned his lesson, because the first time he ran his mouth, he tried to sort of intimidate Diaz. You're not going to do it. And he didn't this time. You know, for months through leading up to the fight, he really didn't really say much. And he talked about how, I'm not going to break this guy down. You know, he's from the streets. He's a tough guy. All that stuff isn't going to work. It works with other fighters. And then, boom, the second he gets to Vegas, he starts throwing water bottles at him. So it tells me that it's real. And it's just, you know, we've all been there, right? I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to do it. And then you do it.
Looking at the fight now, right? If you watch the end of that first fight, it looks like McGregor has no chance. Diaz could have knocked him out. He kind of gives up his back just to not get knocked out, get submitted. But rewatching the fight, I watched it last week. The first half of it, McGregor was landing everything he wanted. The problem is he's used to knocking out smaller guys with one of those shots. I think he just kept throwing and really just gassed himself out. If he's smarter with his energy and kind of goes for his accuracy, which he's always done with the smaller guys, do you think this is a different fight, or are we going to see a similar one?
Yeah, I think you raised a good point, because I've watched it a couple of times now, and you know, you're right. I mean, when you see the end and you see Diaz's face, that's his blood that he's covered in, right? You know, he was getting carved up. Robin Black on the Fight Network does great technical analytical breakdowns of these fights, and he was highlighting the success that Connor was having with the feet, and you know, specifically the leg kicks. And Diaz really does leave himself vulnerable to that. He's so tall, and he really doesn't defend the leg kick. He sort of eats them and says, "Oh, do it again, bring it on, do it again." But without being stated, I just raised a great point in that Connor was knocking out 145-pound fighters. Diaz, say what you will, and, you know, Diaz has lost fights before, but no one's ever questioned Diaz's toughness. You know, I think if I'm Diaz, and you raise a great point as far as Connor stretching this out, I really do believe the over is the play. I think it will get into, like, the third round. It's 2.5 rounds. I don't think it's going to be a quick finish. It was 4 minutes and 12 seconds of the second round last time. I don't think it's going to be that quick of a finish this time. But I think Diaz has to be careful and not eat too many shots and sort of, you know, let Connor, you know, he's going to think that Connor's expending energy when he's eating these shots, but he's got to be careful because Connor does have a lot of power. I don't think he knocks Diaz out. Ultimately, though, I really believe Diaz just has more ways to win. I think Connor's a great fighter, but I think he bit off more than he can chew. You know, he's jumping up from 145 to 170. It's a big freaking jump. I just think, you know, he's a schoolyard bully. He was knocking the crap out of people. He was stealing everybody's lunch money. But the gangsters in the corner, you know, they didn't care. They, you know, they weren't paying attention to him. And basically, you know, put it in schoolyard terms, I think Connor picked on the wrong dude here. I just think Nate's bigger. I think he's longer. I like his ground game a hell of a lot more. Connor's talking about how he's worked on his jiu-jitsu and this and that. I was talking to a black belt today, and they're saying, you know, you don't get better in jiu-jitsu in 3 months. It doesn't work like that. It's a lifelong process. So if the fight goes to the ground, I think we could have a similar situation where he submits him again. You know, but it's an even fight. The fight's a pick 'em for a reason. And it's interesting what a big difference the odds were. First time they fought, Connor opened up as a -575 favorite. Now, basically, Connor's like -110, -115 right now.
Wow.
I know you're not a big McGregor fan from the past, but bear with me here because I've wanted to ask you this for a while. It's kind of a long question, but look, essentially, McGregor, 3 fights. Became a celebrity overnight, the fights against Seaver, Mendez, Aldo. But look at the effect he has on other fighters and kind of how much power he has with that. Dos Anjos, when he was going to fight him, was going to be a main event set to break records. Without Conor McGregor, his next fight, he lost his belt on a Thursday night. Aldo Edgar at UFC 200, 2 of the top 10 pound-for-pound fighters in the world, fighting for a belt at UFC 200. I think they were one of the only fights that didn't ever get the main event title, probably because of McGregor's shadow over it. And then Nate Diaz has done everything, one of the toughest fighters ever, but never really a headliner. Would have been headlining UFC 200 in a non-title fight that really means nothing. And now without McGregor, isn't even on the card. Why does Conor McGregor
have
so much power?
That is a long question.
And with the last part, why is Connor obsessed with Diaz?
No, why does he have so much power? Like, if you look with every
You know, that's a good question. I brought up the same thing, actually. And you know what? You know, your boy Elliot jumped in there at the end. It wasn't that long.
It's the longest
Elliot,
question, right? And I ruined it.
I was hanging with it. But, you know, he claims he made the UFC $300-400 million last year, right? Which is ridiculous. And I actually broke down the numbers because the UFC was already making about $250 million before, you know, anyone ever heard of Conor McGregor. So I think that Conor probably made them about $70 or $80 million extra dollars, you know, during his run. which is legitimate money. There's no doubt about it. He provided a spark, but he's, and you raise a good point. He's not as, you know, he's not GSP. He's not selling out 55,000 seat arenas, is he? Or stadiums, I should say. And it's funny because Connor, you know, he's had that bravado about, I'm going to be, you know, I changed the game. I'm going to be a $100 million fighter. Yet the fact of the matter is, it's been, there's been wide media reports that the UFC has cut the ticket prices for this event. The buzz isn't there. I think he's become the little boy that cried wolf one too many times. It's sort of like Donald Trump. You know, it's entertaining at first, and then, you know, after a while, it's just annoying. You know, the annoying smart-ass guy at the bar is funny the first couple of jokes, right? Or the heckler at a sporting event. And I think that's what Connor has sort of turned into right now, where you just sort of tune it out, and I get turned off, and I don't want to dislike Connor, because I like a lot about him, and I respect a lot about him. But at the same point in time, you know, he doesn't run the game. You know, you're a 145-pound champion. You know, let's look at some of the legends of the game. You know, like a John Jones, who hasn't lost. How about that? And has been dominant for years. You know, Connor couldn't handle success so much to the fact that he let it get to him and he couldn't show up to a damn press conference. You know, less than a year in. And I don't want to disrespect any of the fighters that he beat, because you can't take away that tear that he went on in destroying everybody at 145. But you know, the most impressive win, obviously, was against Jose Aldo. I don't know if he'd beat Jose Aldo if they fought again. I never thought, you know, Connor was as good as he thinks he is. He's a damn good fighter. But I think his game's going to become less entertaining if he's not making the money, right? And if they're slashing ticket prices right now, it tells you that, you know, he's not the draw that he once was, even 6 months ago. That's what losing will do.
With Gabriel Morenci, Sports Rage, looking ahead to UFC 202. Those are the big names. What else are we looking at this card?
Well, you know what? It's actually, to me, it's not even the most interesting fight, this Diaz-Connor fight. Only because it is at 170. They fall into the trap of super fights. And, you know, I've always known that the belt was kind of just sort of, you know, just sort of jewelry, so to speak. We all know that the rankings, the official UFC rankings, never really mean anything. You know, they sort of pretend that they do. But I'm sort of perturbed and annoyed by this. I'm annoyed that Connor should be fighting at 145 pounds. And it shouldn't, like, Max Holloway's life shouldn't be on hold because Connor wants a rematch at 170. The whole thing's ridiculous. I'll give him credit. He's putting his reputation on the line. But, you know, call me old-fashioned. I like knowing that, you know, these guys are fighting for something besides just money. And Anthony Rumble Johnson and Glover Teixeira, Elliott, this is a man's fight, man. We're talking about two 205-pounders can knock out heavyweights. And, you know, with John Jones out of the picture right now for the next, I don't know, year or two, I would assume. Daniel Cormier's got to fight somebody, and the winner of this fight will fight for the light heavyweight championship. And this is just a badass fight. And Cowboy, listen, Conor McGregor brings in the casual viewer. You know, maybe somebody that doesn't watch every pay-per-view. Connor's fighting. You know, let's check this out. I like him. He's entertaining. But for MMA purists and UFC diehards, you got Rick Story and Cowboy Cerrone, which, to put it in, like, classic terms, Elliot, it's like two original six hockey teams. You know what I mean? You know, this is like the Chicago Bears and the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, just two old-school throwback. These guys don't talk smack. They throw with bad intentions. So it's actually pretty intriguing. The undercard, you know, they're sort of selling this that it's Connor and they didn't really stack the card. There's so many cards that they didn't stack the undercard too much. But the top three fights, very, very interesting.
Gabriel Morenci, always a pleasure. Come back soon.
Hey, always a pleasure, Elliot. Thanks for the invite, man.
Sports Rage, ladies and gentlemen. always great to talk to Gabriel Morenci as we get ready for UFC 202. We got one song left in our countdown and a couple of gold medalists that were heard today on Sportsnet 590. See if we can't squeeze in a little bit from both of them as we close out the show tonight. Canada fourth in the 4x100. Great final leg from Andre DeGrasse, as you might expect, but just a hair short. And Canada ends up just on that side of the medals. But gold medals there were for Canada, and we'll hear from a couple of them coming up in a moment. Finally, an opportunity. I mentioned it off the top of the show. See if we can't squeeze in a few minutes from both of them. Great interviews, both. First of all, Erica Wiebe, who won a gold medal for Canada in the 75-kilogram wrestling. And also an opportunity to check out gold medalist Derek Drouin on with Jeff Blair earlier today. So here we go. Wrestling gold for Canada.
Of wrestling. Erica, thank you for this. An incredible run for you. And, of course, a year ago, not part of the Pan Am Games Canadian team, and here you are a year later, an Olympic champion. What happened in those 12 months?
Yeah, and I was always the same wrestler, and, you know, I always had the physical capabilities and the technical capabilities, but, you know what, I just really started believing in myself, and, you know, I really started, you know, doing all the work around the edges, like the mental training and the visualization, and I really think that was a difference maker for me.
How do you deal with the pressure of this sport, and does it get... We just talked about the disappointments of last summer, but putting that behind you, moving on, you're an Olympian, you're at your first Olympics, you get to the gold medal match. Is that, do you feel like you're playing with house money and there it's easier to put the pressure behind you? Like, how does the mindset change for you as you go through your Olympic tournament?
Yeah, you know, like I felt like I had so much pressure on me, like leading into the games, and even, you know, that was why I was struggling in 2015, because I knew I had what it took, and I was putting so much pressure on myself to wrestle my best and to win every match and to wrestle a certain way, and you know, at this yesterday morning when I woke up for my day of competition, I knew I had done every single thing I could do to lead into that day, to prepare myself, and I really felt so free just to go out there and just to execute my game plan and just to wrestle, because I had done everything I could, and so, you know, right before that Olympic final, it was such an amazing feeling, because, you know, I had wrestled my best and I had had so much fun that day. I'd never had that much fun wrestling before. I mean, it's a tough sport and it's an awesome sport, but, you know, that everything kind of just came together on that day, and leading into the final, I was like, you know, keep the pace high, you know, keep that swagger, and I'm going to be really tough to score on, and I just had all that momentum leading into it.
What do you do with the gold medal now? Because I wouldn't take it off. I'd be wearing that thing forever. I wouldn't be taking it off. I'd be showering in it. What do you do with that thing?
Well, I learned quickly not to take it off, because I actually just took it off and dropped it. Uh-oh. Outside. So it's got a couple dents in it already. Like, no! I know, right? So if you know any good jewelry magicians, let me know. But I know it's heavy, actually. So, you know, when I woke up this morning and I wasn't sure if it was real life. And then I started moving around. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm so sore. Like, this must be true.
So there you go. Ben Ennis from Sportsnet 590, the Fan in Toronto, talking to gold medalist Erica Wiebe, who won in wrestling at the 75-kilogram. One of two gold medals won in 24 hours by Canada. Opportunity for the Jeff Blair Show. And Jeff Blair to talk to the other gold medalist, Derek Drouin, who won in the high jump.
We're very pleased to be joined by Derek Drouin, one of Canada's newest Olympic gold medalists. Derek, first of all, congratulations on your gold medal. And
thank you.
You know, I saw a couple of interviews on CBC, a couple with you, talking to your coach. talking to other competitors. Greg Joy talked about it a little bit. We've heard, and other athletes, as a matter of fact, other track athletes talked about you as well. And they just talked about your focus and your sense of confidence. Here you are. Not only did you win an Olympic gold medal, you didn't miss at any height en route to winning it until you decided to take a shot at the record. And I wanted to ask you about that. What is it like to have the medal in hand? And essentially, you got a freebie here. You know, you got a freebie to set history. To set history. What is that? That, to me, would almost even cement in a competitor's mind just how dominant they were. Or how, let me rephrase that, how good their competition went.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's so fun to watch. If, let's say you're watching the Winter Olympics and a skier is standing at the top of the run and they know they've already won and they can just go down and, you know, enjoy that last run, or a thrower on their last throw has already won and they can just enjoy it. It's like that. Obviously, it's very relieving to know that you've already won, but at the same time, it's really hard to keep the emotions in check and for me to give the bar a good attempt. So I'm glad that I took the attempt at the record, but after the flood of emotions that I felt immediately before that, and then trying to compose myself and give it a good shot, I knew there wasn't a very high probability that I was going to make that bar.
You know,
they shot a movie once in my hometown. Everybody was in it for miles around. Out at the speedway, some kind of heaviest thing. Well, I ain't no movie star, but I can get behind anything. Yeah, I can get behind anything.
There has been a very interesting development at the Olympics in the 4x100. This just in. And who knows, because this could change again. I mean, from what we've seen in pictures and replay, is that Japan seemed to step on the line. But for now, the Americans have been disqualified.
I've seen some on both. But like you said, Athletics Canada tweeted out, U.S. is disqualified. Right. I didn't see it.
Well, no, but I'm looking at the results from Rio right now, and they have Jamaica 1, Japan 2, Canada 3. So the Americans have been disqualified. But, I mean, from what we saw, it looked like there was a Japanese foot on the line coming home. So I don't see anything online as far as a disqualification for Japan is concerned. But right now, it's a bronze medal for Canada. And who knows, you know, earlier in the day, Canada, you know, had a bronze medal, and then the disqualification was turned over, and Canada ended up with no medal in the speed walk and ended up fourth. And so we'll see how this plays out. But for now, in the 4x100, the Canadian relay team has been pushed to third. And what were they, 2/100ths of a second off of the medal?
Canadian record either way. Yeah. The best time a Canadian team has ever run. So either way, I'm looking forward to Tokyo 2020.
And here we are with our number one song as we go into the weekend and the final Tragically Hip concert. Hope you enjoyed the show tonight. We enjoyed bringing it to you. We thank all of our guests for joining us, and we were busy tonight. Chef de Mission from Canada, Kurt Hartnett. We talked to Concordia women's soccer coach, Jorge Sanchez. Team number 14 was the Jaguars, thanks to Dan Kalis. We talked to Giovanni Sardo about the impact. And final, Gabriel Morenci, Sports Rage on UFC 202. And that's it. You can catch our podcasts on Sportsnet.ca. We thank Santiago Betancourt, Freddie Uni. On behalf of Grant Robinson, I'm Elliot Price. See you Monday.